Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.lebcast.net.
In today's show, we'll be talking about innovation and technology transfer. And this is a topic that Jörg's been looking into over many years and that I've recently joined him in. So Jörg, where do we start with the topic of innovation and how do we relate it to our work in territorial development?
Well, I think the first point we want to highlight is that very often people, when they think of innovation, they would indeed think of technology. And we would like to encourage people not to look at it in such a narrow way. So I think the first point you would want to raise is that innovation is not invention. Innovation has once been defined by a famous economist called Joseph Schumpeter as a recombination. So you take a couple of elements that are out there, you put them together in a way that hasn't been done before, and that then generates an innovation. And actually, many of the tools that we are using in LED are interesting examples of innovation. So we take a concept that has been applied somewhere else, like in management science, we combine it with some facilitation tools, we generate a workshop format that works pretty well, and that is a genuine innovation. So invention and innovation are rather different things. And then, of course, innovation is not only something that happens with respect to technology and gadgets, but it is also something that happens in so many other spheres, I mean, like in architecture or in performing arts, or, as a matter of fact, in the way you do territorial development. So there's constant innovation in the way local societies, local communities in certain parts of the world are trying to increase their quality of life or are trying to raise the competitiveness of their locality.
And it would maybe be important to add that a lot of people tend to confuse innovation with formal research and development. So they think that if you do formal research and development, that you are then innovative.
Well, as a matter of fact, the whole thinking on innovation, and not just innovation in a technology perspective, has changed quite fundamentally over the past decades. The thinking has been shaped to a large extent by what happened in World War II and after World War II in certain large projects, like the American effort to develop the nuclear bomb in World War II, where you had this direct link between basic research, applied research, development, and then the creation of a gadget or the creation of a device, an explodable device. And you had something similar with the American Man to the Moon program, developing rockets and developing all those technologies that you needed to put man on the moon in a very short period of time. And this kind of experience has shaped the thinking of many people who think that in order to get an innovation, in order to get a successful new product, you need to put a lot of effort into basic research, and that will then spill over into applied research, and that will then spill over into development, and then ultimately you end up with a new product. And I think what we've learned over the past decades is that indeed sometimes does happen, but it is certainly not the predominant pattern when it comes to innovation.
Yeah, so that kind of innovation is very expensive, where you have basic research leading to applied research, leading to some other experimental application or even commercialization. And it can typically also take very long. So, Jörg, a lot of people, when they think of innovation, they think of product innovation. So that is where somebody actually makes a new gadget, let's say a mousetrap. And this kind of innovation has become really common in the last 100, 150 years all over the world. What other kinds of innovation do you find?
Well, I think when you look at the literature, the common distinction is between product innovation and process innovation. So with product innovation, you get new products. With process innovation, you get a better and improved way of producing a given product or providing a given service. What is often not so much reflected is the fact that there is also business model innovation. And when you look at what has been driving economic development in the past, you find that very often business model innovation was one of the main drivers, was one of the main factors in generating new industries or new service sectors. And I think it's important to understand that business model innovation is not necessarily related to technological innovation, to new processes, as in new machinery, for instance, or new products. Very often it's just a brilliant idea that may or may not be related to a given technology that somebody comes up with, and that then is the basis of a new company or even an entire new industry.
So if we think of the business model of Amazon, would that then be an example of a process innovation or a business model innovation?
It's an interesting case. I mean, Amazon, this electronic bookseller that then also ventured into selling all sorts of other things. I think when you look closely at it, you find that they have come up with product innovation, process innovation, and business model innovation. Initially, it looked just like a bookshop, except that it was an online bookshop, so you couldn't go to the shop, but you had to order online. But then they came up with additional services that were quite innovative and that didn't exist before, such as coming up with very sharp ways of referring books that might interest you to you, and referring DVDs and referring whatever other products they are selling to you based on your earlier purchasing. But then they also came up with genuine business model innovation, for instance, in terms of pulling in other businesses. So rather than keeping competitors out, aggressively pulling supposedly competitors in, specialized providers of not only old books, but also new books. And they have also innovated around the way they're using the facilities that they have. So they are not only a retailer anymore, they are also a provider of IT services, which is something that most of us don't know and don't need to know because we don't need those services. But the fact that they have these huge computer systems which aren't fully used all the time is something that they can leverage for IT services that they can sell to other businesses, and especially to startup businesses who wouldn't be able to afford a very costly and very complex to manage IT system, IT hub.
So, Jörg, in our training events, we usually identify three patterns of innovation. Let's quickly go through those three patterns of innovation. Mm. We typically act this out. So you could, in your imagination, now see Jörg and me doing physical movements in our little room where we're recording this show. So the first kind of innovation that we often observe is catch-up innovation. What do we mean with that?
Well, I think it might be useful just to quickly take a step back and remind ourselves that innovation is not only this kind of heroic innovation that takes us to the moon, or the fancy new gadget that we keep carrying around or using in our household. Basically, whenever anybody anywhere does something that he or she hasn't done before, whenever a business starts to do things in a different way, that is an innovation for that business. So there's lots and lots of innovation going on all the time and everywhere. Now, when we are looking at the reality of the countries where we are working, one of the most obvious challenges that we often see is that producers and companies are using processes and are using machinery and equipment that is not exactly state of the art. So when I think of what I've seen in some countries where brick makers were using technology that in some occasions was 100 years behind the current state of art, in other cases it was 500 years behind the state of the art. So that is a constellation where you would ask, well, isn't there maybe an opportunity to catch up, to reduce this enormous gap in terms of not just technological gadgets and hardware, but also in terms of productivity, that is, separating those producers from the current state of the art or a more recent state of the art? And wouldn't closing that gap not only enhance their competitiveness, but actually also improve their income and lead them to an improved livelihood?
Okay, so back to catch-up innovation. That would then explain what you've just commented on, that a lot of companies are simply just far behind, and they are running and they're producing and they're working very hard and they're adapting old technology to try and deliver newer products. but they're actually just not catching up. In fact, they might even be falling behind. Mm-hmm. So the second pattern of innovation that we often identify in developing countries is running to stand in the same place.
Well, I've often had these conversations, for instance, with export companies. So a typical case would be your furniture producer in South Africa or in Indonesia or in Egypt or wherever else who is supplying furniture to, say, IKEA. And IKEA is constantly expecting from them that they are improving on their quality, maybe increase the diversity of the specific product that they come up with, and at the same time reduce the cost all the time. So this kind of company would be constantly innovating, finding ways to produce that furniture in a more efficient way, to make it more cost effective, to produce in a cheaper way. However, this ongoing innovation and all the competencies the company would build with this innovation effort wouldn't at all change their position in the value chain. They still are in this very same position in the value chain. They don't get more profitable or anything. It's just the minimum effort required for them to stay inside the value chain and to keep delivering to whatever customer in Europe or North America.
And for these kind of companies, if they stop innovating, then they typically lose out. So for them, the cost of not innovating is actually quite high. Mm-hmm. And the third kind of innovation that we often find is a pattern of leading edge.
Well, those are the companies that many people probably would intuitively think of. Those companies that are first in the world innovators that come up with completely new products that you've never seen before. And that might create completely new markets. So Apple with its iPod might be a typical example of that, of a company that innovates a product that comes up with a new product, and in this case, a new service and a completely new business model, and that is creating a very, very strong position in the marketplace based on innovation.
And they keep on innovating because they want to stay ahead. And if they stop innovating, then their competitors catch up with them. So they are constantly competing for their market or for specific market segments.
Now, I think one of the points that we also would want to mention, and one of the points that for quite some time, I think, has not been properly understood, is that it is not intrinsic to companies that they innovate. We often tend to assume that quite naturally every company is innovating all the time. The truth, however, is that it's quite different. So first of all, there's a significant share of companies that when you ask them would state, no, we don't innovate. And when you then try to find out why they don't innovate, one of the answers might be, well, because we don't really have to. We have some kind of robust product or robust service that we can sell, and there is no specific reason why we would have to change that or why we would have to upgrade that all the time. And I think related to that then is the insight that the innovation behavior of companies is usually not driven by intrinsic factors, but rather by extrinsic factors, and in particular by the need to compete in very competitive markets, to survive in highly competitive markets.
But it should be added that if a company, very often when we ask companies, do you innovate, they only think of product innovation. And they forget that changing the way they buy their inputs or the way trucks offload or upload products, and that all those kind of increases in efficiency in itself can be described as innovation.
Mm-hmm. Now, related to that is the phenomenon that it's actually quite rational for companies not to innovate. And I mean, the example you just gave is quite an instructive one. So when you're switching from one supplier to the next one, as a company, you would do that because you expect a better price or maybe better quality of the service that you get from the other company. But then as you start interacting, you have to explain everything anew. You have to first build the relationship. You have to explain your process. You have to understand their process. So the initial effect will be that your productivity drops. And I think it's important to understand that innovation basically is a nuisance. So we tend to look at it in a very heroic way and in a very positive way, because we as consumers are the main beneficiaries to innovation, because we get better products or cheaper products or both. But from a company perspective, innovation is basically a nuisance. Innovation disturbs the regular flow of things. Innovation irritates the system as it is robustly operating at a given time, and it leads to a drop in productivity and thus is invariably generating cost. And that is one of the reasons why companies often think twice before they go into innovation, and especially before they go into somewhat more radical innovation. So slightly improving things is one thing, but going for something that is radically different is a completely different story, and is something that companies would often hesitate to do, because they think that it will compromise the technology or the processes that they are running now, and that they are running very efficiently.
It is also important to remember that time spent on adapting something is also a cost. So time is not for free. Mm-hmm. And to maybe illustrate an example of what Jörg just explained, earlier this year we interviewed a pharmaceutical company, a really large pharmaceutical company, and they complained non-stop about the packaging industry or the specific packing technologies that they were using. And the real reason why they are not switching to the better packaging suppliers or the better equipment is simply because of the cost of stopping their process, putting in the new machines. But the bigger effect is them not actually knowing whether this is really going to work better or whether there's going to be all kinds of comebacks from their customers, who must then also update their technology and their methods of packing. So a lot of people would look at this firm and say, well, you need to update, you need to do something innovative here or adapt a new technology. But just the total effort involved is just too high. And that then basically means that they can't innovate in that specific area. So maybe it is important to also highlight that innovation is a change process, and that people will resist innovation for the very same reasons why they don't like change. We all promote change, but when it comes to changing, or when change is enforced onto us, we typically don't enjoy it so much.
I think what I would actually like to emphasize that there are these two very different dimensions in terms of resistance to change. There is resistance to change that just has to do with comfort, because changing all the time is something that makes many people uncomfortable. But I think it's also important to understand this point that I tried to explain earlier, that change, that innovation, invariably involves a cost. And while the cost is very predictable, the benefit that you get from it is not predictable. So you hope for a benefit, but it might just not materialize. So from that angle, resistance to change is actually something that is perfectly rational. And I think we often tend to underappreciate that phenomenon. We tend to think that people are resisting change, that people are resisting innovation because they are lazy. And that is not necessarily the case. It may be the case, but just so often it is a perfectly sensible and a perfectly rational attitude to resist change and innovation. And that is why in innovation processes we invariably have to come up with facilitation tools and change management tools to actually make change happen.
I always joke in our trainings that lazy people are more innovative, because they have a natural tendency to try and find a shortcut or a cheaper way or a faster way of doing something. So I think that we should leave this conversation at this point and maybe point to our listeners that we will be doing a few more shows on innovation, and that our next show would be on innovation system and how one can assess and understand a innovation system.
Right. Thanks a lot.
So we remind you to please go onto our website and to send us your comments and to make contributions to the show. And if you have any interesting examples, then to also maybe highlight that to us. And then please tell your family and your friends about our podcast.